Can celebrities swing the midterm election? What's the dirtiest city of them all? And should Trump change the birthright clause? This is episode 8 of the Classical Liberal Podcast.
Your tears are delicious and your parties will die.
I'm telling you, he says what I'm thinking.
That Rothbard libertarian, that Jefferson libertarian, you know I'm not messed with libertarians.
And then we're going to Washington, D.C. and take back the White House.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 8 of the Classical Liberal Podcast. I'm so happy to be back with this name and with the show. A lot of you guys sent me emails. I had some conversation with some friends, and you guys basically just turned my mind around to come back to the Classical Liberal Podcast. The show was basically like the other podcasts, and I was like, you know what? Forget it. We're bringing it back. So welcome to the Classical Liberal Podcast. This is the turnaround episode. I'm glad to be back. A lot of things to talk about today, but first, we got to talk about these midterms. It is coming up, ladies and gentlemen. We are only a couple days away. A 4 days away from November 6th. Get out there, folks, and vote. Don't forget. It is so important for you to be out there and involved with this election. These are the people who represent you. These are the people who be making laws on your behalf. Go out there. Be involved. Don't just say the system's corrupt. We already know that. We're trying to fix it. This is what this is all about. Many people don't believe it, but I believe it, and I think we can do it. Go out there. Vote who you want to vote for in office, and be able and be ready to work and fix this political climate that we're in. Guys, I got a lot to bring to you. Before, let's talk about our sponsors at recuro.org. R-E-C-U-R-O.org. You hear me say it every episode. You hear me say it for the rest of my episodes. Check them out. Liberty-loving website. Submit your content. Listen to our content. Read some of our great articles that we have on that website, and you will have a fantastic time. So, this weekend, leftist Shia LaBeouf has decided to play his little capture the flag game, the he will not divide us. I don't know if you guys remember back during the inauguration. He did a little art installation here, putting up a camera and basically chanting, he will not divide us. He will not divide us, and invited a whole bunch of other folks to come out and, say things about how Trump will not divide us. And as you guys know, that installation quickly dropped because of all the violence and the fighting, including Mr. Shia LaBeouf himself hitting a couple people, and of course this thing kicking off. But now, a couple weeks ago, he started this kind of capture the flag thing, and I don't think he really meant to do it, and he really didn't, because thank God for 4chan, Reddit, and 8chan. Like, oh my God, I love these websites, and I love the people who takes the time to just crack some balls and bust somebody's spirit. But he decided to make this he will not divide us flag and post it out. But LaBeouf was kind of tricky this time around, because instead of, posting where this is going to be, he just decided to, put up a flag and take a picture of it and put a video installation on it and just have it going forever. And thank God that our friends at 4chan and other places decided to try to, figure it out. So he posted a picture on his Instagram, of him at a rental cabin, right? So a whole bunch of 4chan users and everybody else decided to try to figure out where the heck this is. Where the heck is this cabin? So they start using a whole bunch of, weather, plane routes, star patterns. And then someone decided to drive their car around once they figure out the kind of area and the kind of, weather patterns where Mr. LaBeouf was. This guy decided to start honking his car horn while watching the live feed just to try to find whether or not his car horn, was getting louder or it was, getting quieter, just to locate this flag. And then the flag was eventually found in my great home state of Tennessee. And then they replaced it with a red Make America Great Again flag in the middle of the night. And then, of course, LaBeouf gets pissed off and he moves the flag overseas so that, you know, it can't be attacked. Because, you know, Americans, we go above and beyond, baby. We go above and beyond. We will go out and find this thing. But he moved it overseas so that his artwork won't be touched and the world can see. And it appeared at a couple of places, like at the Foundation of Art and the Creative Technology in Liverpool. And then, he moved it to France. And then somebody once again figured out where the flag was by using the same thing they did and tried to locate it and did it again. So not only did he get his flag changed here in America, he also went and got it changed in France. So it's a great thing to see when celebrities like him try to push his political agenda and whatnot, and see that people like to troll celebrities and stuff like that. But talking about more celebrities and more trolling and more crazy celebrity push for to get Donald Trump out. Actor James Cromwell warns of blood in the street if Democrats don't win this election. If Democrats don't win this election, there will be blood in the streets. The actor, if you guys don't know, he's actually, I like him as an actor. Played in Babe, played in The Green Mile. He even played in Big Hero 6, you know, Boardwalk Empire. I mean, and even, guess what? American Horror Story. So the guy, he's not a bad actor, and he's definitely not bad at producing movies and shows and stuff. So, you know, I'll give him that, but his political activism is kind of where me and him stop. You know, he works with like different organizations, like People the Ethical Treatment of Animals. He's been frequently arrested about, you know, different things like protesting at a New York power plant and protesting at, I think it was SeaWorld he protested at one year, and he got arrested and made a big deal out of it. So he's a real, real kind of leftist. And he was, at one of these, you know, prestigious movie award, you know, where people invite these actors who've done amazing jobs, and they talk about how crazy our times is. Cause for some reason, ever since Donald Trump has gotten elected, they now want to talk about the crazy stuff that happens with the US government. Because when Obama was in office, they didn't want to talk about him bombing people. They didn't want to talk about him spying on people. They didn't want to talk about him trying to break the Constitution and not following it, but it's okay. But now that Trump's in the office, you know, they want to show that, you know, he's not going to divide us. He's not going to destroy the country. But Mr. Cromwell is thinking that if Democrats doesn't win, if they don't win these midterm elections, he says that there's going to be blood in the streets. Democrats, maybe Democrats are going to rise up, you know, with their cisgenders and all their ban on guns. You know, they're going to rise up with a whole bunch of sticks and stuff and get their army of Antifa to go out in the streets and break windows because, you know, they can't win an election. But, you know, this is hilarious, right? I mean, come on, guys, this guy, what kind of crap is this? We talk about all the time about how we're tired of violence. We're tired of people getting hurt. You know, use your ideas, you know, debate your ideas, win it in the arena of ideas. But no, they don't want to. He quotes, I'm going to quote him because this is what he said, and I found this injury. He says, "We're living in a very curious time, and something is coming up which is desperately important to this country and to this planet. And that is the election, in which hopefully, in some measures, we are going to take back our democracy." We're not a democracy. "We will have a government that represents us and not the donor base. We will cut through the corruption, and we won't have to do what comes next, which is either a nonviolent revolution or a violent one, because this has got to end." Listen, folks. Listen, a non-violent revolution, that's called electing. That's called actually pushing the culture to vote for your ideas. That's saying, putting out a positive idea and saying, hey, this is what we should do. This is positive. We don't want to hurt anybody. We want to show that we can tell people common sense things and do it and show transparency in government. Now, an actual violent one is actually beating the shit out of people and killing people, which is most likely what he wants. He wants to see that. And that's what pisses me off the most about these active celebrities, because they're not going to be involved. And he talks about a donor base as if he is not a part of that donor base, donating thousands and thousands of dollars to Democrats who wants to steal your stuff, who wants to take away your liberties, who wants to build laws on top of laws and move you closer and closer to a socialist country. He's talking about the donors who says, no, we want liberty. No, we don't want that crap. No, we want something different. So he's talking about those corrupt donors. And like I said, there's donors on both sides, and they're absolutely terrible. But he's part of that donor class. He's part of that hierarchy class. He's part of that class that is sitting at the very top, who don't have to worry about day-to-day things, who don't have to worry about, you know, the small things that we sweat every single day as we interact in our social interactions outside of our homes and things like that. He doesn't have to worry about that because he's a famous actor. He's a Hollywood actor. What does he have to worry about? Absolutely nothing. So earlier this week, on CNN, Don Lemon. Oh, you guys knew this was coming. You guys just knew. Got a little video for you. If you guys are watching the video version, I'll let you listen in to the podcast, the sound version, the audio version of Mr. Don Lemon. And basically what you're about to hear is, it's kind of weird, man. I'm not going to lie. It's something that really kind of pissed me off, and I just kind of laughed about it, but you know, I'm not going to be too mad. I'll play it for you. Here we go.
He's being investigated for hate crimes. Don Lemon is here right now. We barely had time to cover it because we were distracted by another extremist that was doing bad things in the name of hate.
Yeah, and then now another one, and you have all of them in a row. And, you know, we messaged about this a little bit this weekend. I keep trying to point out to people not to demonize any one group or any one ethnicity, but we keep thinking that the biggest terror threat is something else, some people who are marching, you know, towards the border like it's imminent. And when the last time they did this, a couple hundred people came, and they, you know, most did get into the country. Most of them got tuckered out before they even made it to the border. So we have to stop demonizing people and realize the biggest terror threat in this country is white men, most of them radicalized right up to the right. And we have to start doing something about them. There is no travel ban on them. There is no ban on, you know, they had the Muslim ban. There is no white guy ban. So what do we do about that? So, and first of all, let me just say this. Maurice Stollard is the name, and Vicky Jones, and they have been lost in all of this, two people who were killed on Wednesday that you talked about. They have been lost about this, and I know that people feel that this story has not gotten enough coverage, and we will honor them tonight in our program. But go on, Chris, sorry.
Good. No. I'm going to do it in the closing. You're making the right point, you're covering the right story, and I appreciate you for that.
All right. See you soon.
All right.
Jesus. Yeah, just imagine Chris Cuomo up there. You know, I can only imagine how he feels. He's like, oh God, a white man ban. I need to get this man out this studio. you just see his face, and he's just like, yeah, I appreciate it. You know, kind of looking around like, oh God, a white guy ban, you know. Okay. All right. Don Lemon. I don't like him. Never really liked him. He always got on my nerves. He always tried to be the smart man in the room, but he's really not the smartest guy on CNN. There's plenty of other people that I'd rather listen to on CNN than Don Lemon. And Don Lemon has turned into this trademark black guy, on CNN that just, you know, says everything that the puppet masters want him to say. And this is just so ridiculous. Like, this is so, he doesn't want to demonize people, but we want people to realize the biggest terror in this country is white men. What? White men is the biggest terror in this country, according to Don Lemon, and he still has a job at CNN. If anybody else wants to say this anywhere else on any other news station, he will be gone. But since it's CNN, and of course CNN agrees, he's still there. And of course CNN is not going to comment on said, you know, remarks, and it's ridiculous. Like, to say that white men is, that they are the biggest terror in America is complete crap. And I'm tired of, and this is when we start putting people into groups. This is why I hate when people start just taking, you know, individuals' actions and putting it on every single body. I don't think all white men who are on the right wants to go and shoot up a synagogue. I don't think all white men on the right wants to go and shoot a whole bunch of black people or come and rob my house and burn it down. I don't think a whole bunch of Muslims want to come over and blow me up. Muslims not even a race. I don't think anybody, any Muslim of the Islamic religion wants to do that to me. I don't think that's every single body. I don't think that the radical right white men are going to do that to me. Like, are you kidding me? Like, this is what happens when we put people in groups. We should talk about the individual. We should only care about that individual and their actions and then stop putting it on everybody. Black people have experienced this all of our lives. All of our lives we've experienced this being put into groups and taken in us and assumed that we like this kind of thing or that we are this kind of way. Like, this has happened continuously, and Don is doing the same thing to white people. And he says, no, we shouldn't do that. He says in the past, he's been like, no, you should always talk about the person and their actions and stop assuming that just because they're this skin color or with this belief that they're going to do this. Guys, talk about the individual. Let's take politics out of it. Let's take their skin color out of it. Let's talk about them. Let's talk about how crazy they are and their mindset and what they believe, right? Like, let's talk about the individual, because I know a whole bunch of white people who are not a terror to our country. And I'm sure his boss, who are white, and I'm sure his husband, who is white, does not want to go shoot up a Kroger or shoot up a synagogue. Don Lemon is doing the exact thing what the left wants to do, and they're marginalizing people as they've always done, because that's the only tactic they know. Put people in groups, fear monger, that's it. I mean, God, like, it's like they're playing on a Trump tune. It's like, oh, Trump are using, you know, Central America and Mexican looking people. Oh, we're going to use white people. That's going to turn the election. That's going to get people in the office. That's going to get other white people, which are the majority of this country, to go vote, because they should feel ashamed of how other white people are doing. And now they're going to vote for us, and everything's going to be okay. Guys, ridiculous. Ridiculous. Don needs to come off TV. He needs to go do his own podcast or go do something else, but not be on CNN. I don't know how CNN is continuing to let this guy on here, but then again, CNN is fake news. And I guess they don't care whatever comes out of his mouth as long as it brings in rating and more sheep. So whatever, you know, Don is ridiculous and he needs some help. He's on the spiral right now. But another story. Nashville youth pastor and undercover high star Daniel Goodall arrested on 5 counts of statutory rape by authority figures. So this 25-year-old, if you guys don't know, Daniel, I actually met him before and I have shook the man's hand and spoken a couple words to him, and he was very nice, very kind. And I had zero, assumptions or anything that this guy was some kind of rapist. You know, obviously, you know, they don't just come out and say, hey, I'm a rapist, but you know, it's amazing. And I saw this story, one of my good friends had posted it, and when I saw it, I was like, no freaking way. And I've watched A&E's Undercover High. If you guys have not seen it, it was a pretty good show, and he did very well. And this guy, you know, Daniel was he an absolutely uplifter. I mean, positive guy. One of the most positive guys you ever see. Like, I mean, I'm pretty positive when I'm out there talking to people, but this guy, he lifted me up. Like, I felt good. I'm not even a Christian or anything. And just how deep he was in his faith and how excellent he was to other people, just to see him and see this story come out. I mean, one of the best things he said, my mission in life is to help kids be the best they possibly can by building relationships, building community, and through those things, seeing those lives change. Because I work with children. I like to see children, especially when they're, you know, if they're in their hard times, I like to try to uplift them and give them some positivity and try to give them some direction. And he did the same. But instead, this man decided to use his power, decided to use his ability to coerce people to talk to him and understand him and get him on their side and you know, lift them up, to actually rape people. Not one, not two, not three, but 5 freaking people. He's a 25-year-old, and he was a pastor at the West Nashville Dream Center. But earlier this year in April, he left, which I think now thinking back, he probably left because of all this stuff that was coming out. And he was a student minister, and he was like, that's my problem, you know. Like, people have their demons, and I'm not defending what he did. I am not defending what he did, but it's amazing to know someone and then see these terrible, terrible actions, which I condemn completely. Like, and it's just one of those things that just bothers me. And I'm just like, no, man, you're a positive black man in Nashville, lifting up kids, showing them the way. You get me hyped up, and then this crap comes out. So he was arrested, and the grand jury indicted him on October 15th. And he's now free on bond as of on Halloween on a $25,000 bond, which posted on Halloween Day. The Davidson County found that he had at least 5 occasions where he used his legal, professional, and occupational status and used his position of trust or power to accomplish sexual penetration of the victim. 5 counts of the periods between May 2016, October 2017, June 2016, August 2016, June 2016, and so on. And a lot of people are sad. A lot of people are just upset about what was happened. And it does touch my heart. And I feel worse for those families, who are affected by this young man and everything that he's done. And it sucks that this had to happen and that he decided to do this. I mean, God, it's just terrible. But I hope they throw the book at him. I hope he gets the as long a sentence as possible. And I hope that we're able to help those families. As Tennesseans, we always, you know, get up and volunteer our own. So, you know, there's been a GoFundMe page. I'll post it, in my show notes. Go out there and try to support these families. And, you know, hopefully Daniel will learn his lesson in prison and, you know, maybe turn his life around and come out to be a little bit better. But stay the hell away from, you know, kids and stuff like that, because he's ridiculous now. He's done. So before we go to the break, there's a story that I wanted to talk about, and I saw this on Reddit, and I wanted to really dive into it and talk about it with you guys, because it kind of pisses me off. So the dirtiest place in America and almost in the world, some from a UN report, says that San Francisco is a cruel and inhuman homeless crisis and is the dirtiest place in America. Now, the UN decides to send, you know, different reporters around the world to these areas where things might be kind of shitty. And they go in and they basically try to get things taken care of. They try to, you know, report what they see and report back to the UN. And then UN will tell the world, of course, you know, this is what we found. Here's our data from our special agents and talk about it. And the UN decided to go ahead and start earlier this year, which they wrote a couple reports, but then the final report came out a couple days ago, and a lot of us has been reading it, and a lot of us has been getting into it. But I'll go in a little bit of what they wrote, and then we can kind of dive in to exactly my thoughts and why San Francisco is the way it is, other than the fact that it's a leftist safe haven of crap. So the UN calls that the condition for homeless residents in the Bay Area is cruel and inhumane and the violation of human rights. The report comes to the heels of fact-finding mission that assessed the state of homeless encampments in Oakland and in San Francisco. So the report calls on cities to provide more affordable housing and eliminate policies that restrict food, water, and basic health services. So basically, these camps that they have for the homeless in San Francisco, if you guys ever been to San Francisco, you will see it. It is everywhere on the street. And all my friends in San Francisco, I know I have a few that listen to this podcast and live in San Francisco. I'm sorry that, you know, your city has yet to fix this issue, but there's a serious issue with them, with how many homeless people they have. So, the special agent for, revealed her findings before the UN General Assembly. Reporting that the homeless residents of San Francisco and Oakland has denied access to water, sanitation, health services, and other basic necessities. Then she said in January, she went on a fact-finding mission to assess the state of Bay Area's homeless encampments, which she found that they are teeming with trash, feces, discarded needles, drugs, dead bodies. There are dead bodies in these encampments. And they're rats in the trash. There are rats in the tents. There are families there. There are kids that are there living in these camps as if they were living in Delhi, India. And this is crazy. This is crazy to believe that this is happening. You know, she even compared the city to like Mumbai. Like, come on, and talk about how dirty, and you guys hear, you know, how like, you know, in the slums in India, how terrible, you know, you get feces in the street, rats everywhere, people, homeless people everywhere. She's comparing it and saying it's almost worse in San Francisco than there. That, my friends, is crazy. She compared the Oakland camps to a low income dwelling in Mexico City that had no running water and there was no way for electricity to be, you know, placed down there in that area. So she is comparing it to these really crap cities around the world. And this is in America. This is in America, right? We're supposed to be the land of the free, the greatest country in the world, but in the greatest and one of the best cities, you know, who's had this economic boom because of all these, tech companies and different companies coming to the city. And of course, all the sightseeing and historical, you know, things that happen. So this supposedly, you know, city on a hill, the shining city on the hill is apparently this crappiest place for low income folks, for normal people living and running the city, whether it's retail and food and all that stuff. For these folks, they're almost living on the streets. She said San Francisco has spent nearly $54 million this year on street cleanup and has struggled to accommodate thousands of homeless residents and continue to fail. So let's kind of dive into why is San Francisco so bad? Why are they so poor? And why, other than the fact that, you know, you have this really, you have all this red tape policies, let's talk about some of the income. So in San Francisco, it said that if you make $117,400 for a family of four, that is considered low income. While making $73,000 a year was considered very low income. That is crazy. That is crazy. Listen, if you make $73,000 here in Tennessee, you're living pretty darn good. You're living pretty darn good. Okay? You're sitting pretty high. If you make a $117,400 in Tennessee or in the South period, you're like a king. You're good. You are really good. I mean, okay. So across the US, the median household, right? Income for a family of four is $91,000, which is great, right? And for a family of any size, the figure is about $60,000. But in San Fran, you need more than $117,000 to live above the poverty line. The poverty line. Sorry about that. That is nuts. They blame this on the small expansions because you can't expand that much in San Francisco. You can't really build a lot of apartments, can't build a lot of place, homes and apartments because of the amount of regulation, red tape policy that the city allows in apartments, because a lot of these businesses don't want apartments, don't want homes in these areas. They want it for their business, right? I mean, shoot, for a two apartment bedroom, that's going to cost you roughly between $2,500 to $3,121 a month. That is twice my mortgage. That is crazy. That is nuts, right? There's almost a 270% difference when you look at incomes from the East and the South all the way over to California, especially in places like San Francisco. You're talking about this huge increase, right, of living. These people have to have like, you know, they have to be doctors, they have to be, you know, company owners just to live in the city, right? With over 59,000 homeless people and growing, 59,000, that's right, you heard that correct. Check out the census. And growing, people are dying. People are failing there because of the city not being able to build, not being able to sustain regular old people because of their economic boom, because of their policies, because of their of the wastage of money that they can spend. $305 million was appropriated to them, to the city, to fix this problem. But guess what? The $305 million did not go straight to the homeless people. No, it went to trying to buy out old apartments, trying to fix up old apartments, trying to add more beds and more food to other facility, homeless shelters that, you know, these homeless people can go to, adding on to them. And they also tried to spend another, you know, a couple other $1 million on trying to get, you know, places where they can go shoot up. And so the last percentage, last 12% of that $305 million finally then went to actually going out, tracking the homeless, figuring out who needs help, trying to get people who are really sick to hospitals. So only 12% of the $305 million actually went to the homeless. Is anybody hearing this? Is anybody seeing this? This is nuts. This is nuts, right? There's a the safety net is gone. The failed housing policy is crazy. The economic dislocation is just nasty. The mass incarceration, the family instability, the structural racism that's actually there. Yes, that's right. There is, in fact, a high reports of racism in San Francisco, right? There's tons and tons of roots that this city has to tackle. But what does the left do when they see things are wrong, right? What do they do? Do they go after the root of the root problem? Do they actually say, let's tackle each root. Let's get some think tanks in here. Let's get some people in here. Because obviously, since, you know, Diane Frankenstein, whatever, came into, you know, was mayor of San Francisco way back when, ever since she came in and all her, you know, Newsom and all those folks who's been, you know, taken over as mayor, obviously they haven't done very much. Obviously they don't know how to problem. And the only thing they know how to do is ask for more money. So let's get into what they're asking for now. San Francisco will vote. They will vote on taxing companies for homeless aid come November 6th. So let's talk about this. It says that the funds from the ballot measure would go to housing at least 4,000 homeless people and adding 1,000 beds to shelters over 5 years, which they've already done. Proceeds will also finance mental health and substance abuse facilities and rent subsidies. The rates would range from 0.175% to 0.69% of the revenue generated in the city. So companies that pay a tax base on the payroll rather than gross receipts would face an additional 1.5% levy. So what that basically means is that when they start taxing companies that are making over $50 million, they will be taxed, which most likely this will go through, right? Because people are, they're hurt, right? They see these homeless people, especially people that live in there. They see these homeless people every single day. They walk by them and, you know, and this is a huge crisis in San Francisco. And obviously they're going to probably vote to give more money. And what they're doing here is saying, well, since this economic boom, since all these, you know, tech savvy companies have come in and, you know, really revitalized the tourism, revitalized business here in San Francisco, we're asking them to, excuse me, to give some of their money, right? They're asking for, the city's asking them to take a percentage out of their paychecks to their workers and out of some of their revenue to give back to the city for the homeless. Now, this is crazy, right? This is crazy. This is straight. This is stealing. This is straight stealing because the city cannot figure out another way to actually do this because they can't go to the government and say, we need more money, federal government. Give us more money, please. Because Trump's going to say no. He's going to say, figure this problem out. Without having to spend more money, because every single thing Proposition C represents and puts out to the people, they've already done. They've already done it for the past 20 something years. They've done this before and they're just raising it. Sure, they didn't tax businesses, but they taxed the people more. They'll tax other people more, right? They'll raise property taxes. They've already done this. And now they're putting it onto the businesses over there. And some studies have come out that the annual salary of the cost for business tax or affected companies would rise over $3,700 to $2,500. The comptroller study said over 20 years, there would be up to 875 fewer jobs annually than there otherwise would be, and the city's gross domestic product would lose $240 million a year. So not only are they proposing that they tax businesses, they're also proposing that since they tax businesses, we're going to lose some money, we're going to lose some people in our city, but that's okay. We're helping the homeless. So once they get back on their feet, everything will come back. So I'm going ahead and let you know, I'm against this. And I hope some of my San Francisco listeners are also against this. Okay? You're permanently raising taxes, right? You're doubling spending for homeless service without an actual plan. You're doing the same thing over again without an actual plan. And you're also giving more into the lack of accountability that has been set over that $305 million because they didn't know how to spend it and they didn't spend it correctly, right? There's no evidence that the spending more money and taking more money will actually change or help the city. And matter of fact, it would only say, hey, other homeless people in their surrounding areas, come to San Francisco, come on down, because we just got a whole bunch of money. We just stole a whole bunch of money through taxes, and now we're gonna give it away. We're gonna give it away to you guys, so you guys continue to be homeless, and we can actually, you know, give you a bed or two for a night and put you back on the street and do it again next week. So come on by, right? They have no legitimate plan, and it makes me mad when I see stuff like this. When they don't address the root issues, when they don't address housing supply, when they don't address affordability, when they don't address the red tape of how bad the city council does not let you build apartments in other places. If this stuff does not piss you off, you are in the wrong business, all right? You're just in the business of stealing. We need to be fixing this. They need to fix this. I don't even live in San Francisco, but I'm hyped up about it and I'm pissed. Oh my gosh, I don't know what to say. When we get back from the break, got a lot to talk about. The migrant caravan on the way. Larry Sharp talking about his campaign. And, of course, the birthright issue that is happening in our country today. So stay tuned for the rest of the show, and I'll see you guys after the break. Hey there, thanks for tuning in to the Classical Liberal Podcast. I'm glad you're enjoying the show. But I have to give a shout out to my sponsors at Recuro.org. Recuro.org is a liberty-loving website that promotes liberty articles, videos, and podcasts. So, why don't you go down to Recuro.org, that's Recuro.org, and give some support. And if you're a liberty lover and you make liberty content, go ahead and submit your content on the website, and then maybe you'll see your stuff on the site next to mine. Thanks, and enjoy the rest of the show. Welcome back to the second half of the Classical Liberal Podcast. I'm glad you guys are staying in and having fun and enjoying the show, wherever you may be, running, going to work, whatever you're doing. I appreciate you guys tuning in every single week for both episodes. Guys, I have to talk to you about one of my favorite libertarians, someone who really brought me into the movement that I enjoyed. I enjoyed having him. I enjoyed, talking with him, and being around him. So, Larry Sharp, one of my favorite politicians, and he's not really a politician, honestly. He is just a liberty lover, and he is just excellent. He is an excellent person to market liberty and to push it out. And he is running in New York. And there's this video that caught my eye this week. And he did this a couple months ago. But it's still a great video. And I really want to talk about Larry Sharpe. So I'll play the video for you and what I think.
Like a sacrificial lamb. So how do you do it? If you survive the primary, which we assume you will, how do you beat La Familia? That would be the Cuomo family. How do you do it?
Look, you just called me a sacrificial lamb and a long shot. What, are you kidding me? I'm the only guy with any shot to win this election besides His Majesty. This is the reality of it. The sacrificial lamb is the Republican. This state is clearly blue. In the last 16 years, the same things happened across any statewide election. Governor, attorney general, senator, doesn't matter. Blue team comes in first. Red team comes in second. No change. If I don't win this thing, no change. That's how it works. The sacrificial lamb is Republican, not me. You got the wrong guy.
Man, I love Larry Sharpe. Like I told you guys before, Larry Sharpe is one of the few that I listened to and I enjoyed watching him talk. I enjoy watching him debate when he was trying to become the vice presidential nominee. Larry Sharpe is an awesome guy and he markets liberty to every single body. And he's completely right in his video when he says that he is not the sacrificial lamb. He is not. You're going to get the same thing from Democrats and Republicans in New York. Yes, New York is a very blue city. And you know, I'm not going to sit here and act like I know everything about the politics in New York. But one thing I can say, and one thing that I will agree to, is that New York should be tired of the same silly policies that's going to be ran by the Republican and ran by the family of the Cuomos. It's a continuous fight and nothing is going to change. You're going to keep having people lose. You're going to have people leaving New York. You're going to continue to have higher taxes. You're going to continue to get money taken away from you through taxes. But Larry Sharpe, he gives actual solutions. I watched his little debate that he did because unfortunately he wasn't invited to the actual debate. And I watched that video and I learned something amazing about Larry and something just, you know, typical about New York and New York politicians. Larry gives solutions. He gives you exactly what he thinks and what he is going to do. I watched that debate and I tell you, Cuomo and the other Republican snowflake guy, they did nothing but attack each other. They did nothing. They didn't give any solutions. They just said, you're corrupt and no. You're corrupt. No. But you're more corrupt than me. That's all they did. But Larry Sharpe is sitting there and out every single day campaigning, doing live videos, you know, talking to actual voters, giving them solutions. Go to his website. He gives solutions on his website to every little thing he wants to do. And you know what? And one of the most amazing things about Larry Sharpe that I just enjoy about him is that he's not that kind of libertarian that says, we're going to abolish this, we're going to abolish that, we're going to pull the safety net from under you. No, he is saying, this is what we're going to do. We're going to take these in increments, we're going to take these in strides, and we're going to knock this out. Here's my plan over the next couple years. We're going to do this. I'm not just going to pull the rug from underneath you and leave you there to dangle. I'm not just going to go in and destroy everything, because that's not how you change government. That's not how you govern. That's not how you fix a solution. That's creating another problem. Larry Sharpe stands up for people. He stands up for the individual. He's tired of the corrupt crap that's going on in New York. He wants to fix his states, and he wants to do it in a libertarian way. And that's the most beautiful thing I can see ever. And, you know, in the past, I've talked about libertarian candidates and my thoughts on libertarian candidates and running and, you know, whether or not they have a shot. And I honestly think Larry Sharpe has a shot. And not only does he have a shot, he has a way with people. He has a way to talk to people about issues and bring them to his side. And I think that's the most amazing thing and the greatest thing that a libertarian candidate can have. Reasoning. Legitimate reasoning and legitimate solutions. Larry Sharpe is bringing it to you guys. And my friends in New York, if you guys are watching this, if you guys are listening to the podcast, listen, Larry Sharpe is doing it. He is doing it well. He is marketing himself. He's showing that he's a real threat. He's showing that he's a real candidate. He's not playing around. This is real for him, and I love it. And I love candidates who take it seriously, like Larry Sharp. So I just wanted to make a quick comment about it, because I know elections are coming up, and I know a lot of people are you know, upping the ante when it comes out to, you know, promoting their candidates. And I cannot sit by and not make a comment about this libertarian candidate for governor. Larry Sharp is doing it, folks. And if you don't believe him, go talk to him. He will talk to you. He will send you a message quicker than anything. He will get back to you. This man is doing it, and he's doing it well. And he's one of the best examples for candidates to use. He's one of the best examples to learn from how to be a candidate, how to run your campaign, and how to push the liberty movement. If no one else can, if you can't do it like Larry, man, I don't know what to say to you, because that man is working 24/7, and I'm backing a man like that. That's what I want to see from a libertarian candidate. So Larry Sharp, man, you go out there and you keep on pushing. And all those New Yorkers out there voting for Larry Sharp, thank God for you. And let's try to get everybody else on the train, because this is important. And I'm sure if Larry Sharp wins the governorship, things will change, and things will change for the better. Guaranteed, hands down. In other news, you have Trump sending the U.S. military to the border. And I talked about this a couple weeks ago in my show about how this caravan that has been propped up, that's been using, been used as a political agenda, that's been used as political, you know, term, the political issue that's gonna bring up the red wave, that's gonna continue the Trumpkins, and their stride to push. You know, they're trying their best. They're doing their best, and they're trying, and it's interesting. It's interesting to see this, but it's even more interesting to see how Trump is fanning the fire, how he's getting everybody revved up, right? Right. The U.S. military has actually forced up to 14,000 troops ready to intervene at the southern border with Mexico, including additional 7,000 planned deployment and reserves on round the clock standby at the border. The Pentagon announced this past Monday that it will send up to 5,200 troops to the border ahead of the anticipated arrival of the caravan of Central Americans. So not only are they're ready to send 14,000, they're ready to have 7,000 additional soldiers on the way, and they're already sending, according to the Pentagon, 5,200 troops. So they're already sending out the soldiers and preparing for this, as if this giant caravan of migrants is going to actually pass the border, as if this is going to be like an invasion of some sort, which it's not an invasion. This is not an invasion. This is stupidity. This is fanning Trump's base. This is using our resources to not only, you know, fan up how popular and how strong Trump is on immigration, how strong he is, but also this is just fanning his ego just to send all these troops and waste their time at doing something that's not an invasion. Right? These people are looking for asylum. These people are looking for a better home. And how do you do that? How does that happen, folks? Republicans, let me hear it. You come to the border and you seek asylum. That's how it works, right? These troops are, in fact, deploying with weapons. They will join 2,000 National Guards that's already at the border and combine forces. Right? I mean, this is the same amount of soldiers that's involved, that was, you know, involved with freaking ISIS when they were really big, you know, where they go. You know, this is the same amount. And Trump is doing this to fan his base. He's not doing this because he thinks the caravan's gonna actually come through. He's doing this because my people wants to see the border protected, because all these people that's coming here are rapists and drugs, and druggies and killers and all that stuff. No, all of them are not rapists and drugs. I saw a whole bunch of children in there and a whole bunch of women. Yeah, they're a bunch of rapists and drugs, I tell you. You better watch out for those kids. I mean, yeah, of course, there's probably gonna be a few in there, but generalizing overall that these people are coming just to destroy America, they're just going to invade our country. What kind of stupid crack cocaine are you on, dude? Figure yourself out. This is ridiculous. The U.S. Defense Department officials with knowledge of the deployment, known officially as Operation Faithful Patriot. How the hell is this a Faithful Patriot? How in the hell is wasting our resources and wasting our soldiers' time when we could be doing other stuff? How the hell are you going to call this Operation Faithful Patriot? What the actual shit? Units deployed right now at actual strength between 5,000 troops, and they're gonna be on standby for 24 hours. Guys, listen, if you believe this crap that this caravan is some kind of threat to the United States, you're crazy. You know, if you're like Marshall Blackburn and like to go on stage and, oh my God, this invasion's coming, oh my God. Yes, you're in Tennessee, lady. What are you worried about? Okay, if you're on that side, you need to really look at this situation and really observe what is going on, okay? Because obviously someone's been lying to you, maybe Fox News or maybe some kind of conservative, news outlet. Check yourself, because you're wrecking yourself right now. And I'm so done talking about this about this freaking issue that I'm just done. I just can't believe how crazy people are getting about this and the ridiculousness that I see online. You guys should be ashamed of yourself and you should get over yourself. You're not being invaded. You got it? Got it. Good. Jeez. In Brazil, Bolsonaro. I always said his name. Jair Bolsonaro. I always mess up. Wins Brazil's presidency in a shift to far right. Now, Brazil has constantly been kind of this closing to this communist state. So the Workers' Party, who's been elected, who's elected presidents, a certain president. I can't remember his name at the moment. I'll remember as I start talking about it. But Mr. Bolsonaro, the new president-elect, is his far-right leader, and he really wasn't all that famous throughout the years. He's been kind of this guy and legislator, hasn't really done much, hasn't really passed much legislation. I mean, how can you when you have the Workers' Party there blocking everything and being an authoritarian crap? But you know, Bolsonaro wins the presidency, and now he's defeating communism and trying to use force like we've seen in the Philippines. And I was happy to see that the Workers' Party did not win, but I'm also scared as well. You know, it's like, I'm happy to see that this country may be turning around, but I'm also scared because this guy shows a lot of potential to be a dictatorship, which he has said in the past that he wouldn't mind the dictatorship. He said the only thing that he has to say against the dictatorship was that they didn't kill more people. Now, that's a scary thought. Now, whether he's just up in his base and, you know, talking out of his mouth and using his little signature gun move, whatever, it's scary, right? It's scary, but people in the country are happy. And that's one thing we have to understand, right? When we see countries, right, that are very communist and that are controlling the businesses, taxing, controlling your life, not giving you freedom, killing everyone for just, you know, whatever they want to, that sends the people down a very, very, very dark path, because they see that the government is overreaching, and then they start to want to kill these people, who are overreaching by using the government, who are partnering up with the government, and the government's allowing these corrupt gangs and businesses and drug cartels and stuff to operate. And so people get angry. People get scared because their kids are dying. You know, their kids are getting involved in things that they shouldn't do. Their countries suck. People don't want to come visit Brazil, you know, because of the dangers that they're going to receive, the dangers that they may be in. And this new president-elect, he's running a real... He's running like a Trump campaign. He's using the nationalism. He's saying, no, he's going to fix this. He's going to fix that. He's going to use the government to be the defender of the Constitution, democracy, and liberty. He's going to force this down a throat, and he's willing to kill people, to kill the drug cartels, to kill jail the corrupt legislators and things like that. And that's pretty divisive in itself, right? I mean, sure, I don't want the government to be communist, but I don't want the government to be a dictatorship. I don't want a government to be a fascist government, which this is legitimately may turn into a fascist country. And they talk about Donald Trump being fascist. They haven't seen nothing yet. I mean, this guy is talking about killing people, jailing people, like people that are his, you know, opposition to him. You know, he is one of the loudest people in Brazil who has been just totally just cruel and mean to everyone that in opposition of him. And his rhetoric is just disgusting. It's disgusting, you know? And I'm fearful for the people of Brazil. And I know You know, not living in Brazil, it's a whole different kind of thing. You know, I'm looking from the outside in, and I see what he says, and I see some of the violence and the surging of violence that's going up, and I understand that this may be a dangerous situation. While we celebrate that communism is going down, we fear that fascism is on the rise in Brazil, and I fear that, you know, things might not turn out the way the people want. And there are already some people there who are saying, though, there will be more violence. You know, he wants to give more power to the police. He wants to give more power to the military to get rid of these people, right? He's trying his best to clean up the street. And the only way he knows how, because of the crap he's been through and because of the crap that him and his folks have been through, is to use violence against violence, which in some regards, I don't agree. I think there's a better way to do this. And I think, and I hope that he finds a better way to do this other than just going out and killing everybody and causing more body bags and causing the government to look more authoritarian and things like that. If you're going to be a real defender of the Constitution, democracy, and liberty, let's not use violence. Let's use different ways, different methods. I mean, let's take care of these drug dealers. Let's, you know, get them out off the streets and destroy their lines. Let's destroy the criminal enterprises that are there. Let's take care of them. But I'm not on the side of killing a whole bunch of people. I'm not on the side of just, you know, going in houses and breaking people down and you know, infringing on their liberty. And someone who says they're there to, you know, defend their constitution, democracy, and liberty, it doesn't come off like that. And his rhetoric doesn't come off like that. So I'm really interested to see how Brazil continues and what's going to happen in Brazil. And I'm going to keep an eye on it and keep you guys up to date as much as I possibly can, because this is a situation that could turn deadly very, very soon. And since everyone is on his side, a lot of people is on his side. I mean, the man got 55% of the vote. It's kind of scary. It's kind of scary, folks. And I think something that we all should definitely keep our eye on. So the last thing I wanted to talk about before I end the show here is this birthright citizenship thing that has been breaking the news, that has been everywhere, about, you know, Donald Trump trying to break the anchor babies. Before I give you my opinion, my little 10 cents, let's break it down a little bit, right? Let's talk about textualism and talk about the writing of the Constitution and what it means to actually talk about the 14th Amendment, right? So what is the 14th Amendment and why is it important? So in 1866, shortly after the Civil War ended and slavery was abolished, right? There was a congressman called the Radical Republicans, which passed the Civil Rights Law to ensure that African Americans had a full and equal benefit of the law and proceeding for the security of persons and properties as enjoyed by white citizens. This law applied to former slaves, but not foreigners, and thus it stated all persons born in the United States and not subject to any foreign power, including Indians not taxed, are hereby declared to be citizens of the United States, and such citizens of every race and color, without regard to any previous condition of slavery or involuntary servitude, shall have the same right in every state and territory in the United States to make and enforce contracts, to sue, to be parties and give evidence, to inherit, purchase, lease, sell, hold, and convey real and personal property. So this is the Guarantee the Rights Act of 1866 was constitutional. The Radical Republicans fought and secured the passage of the 14th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution in 1868. This amendment mirrors key acts of the part of the 14th Amendment, which reads, all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and states within they reside, right? So that right there, what I just said, that is the birthright citizenship clause under the current laws. So any children born in the U.S., basically, you know, born in the U.S. on U.S. soil becomes a U.S. citizen unless they are a foreigner, a tourist. And now the fight for illegal immigrants. Now, a lot of people are saying, well, you can't do that. Trump can't go in an executive order and actually do this, which is correct. Right? Let's just be calm about this and let's just talk about this. Let's actually dive into this. Trump cannot do that. There's no way. You know, I'm not a lawyer, but I do, you know, play in the legal realm. I do look at a lot of case law, and I have a background in paralegal. So I get what they're trying to say and what they're trying to do. Now, a lot of people are on the side of that, you know, that saying, the 14th Amendment, that is legitimate to every single person that's born on U.S. soil. And now Trump was wrong. Trump was right slash wrong when he said that, oh, a lot of countries don't do this. There's actually about 30 something countries who use this just soil, which means basically if you're born on their soil, that they become citizens of countries. Now, granted, a lot of these countries who use this kind of just soil kind of thing, they're more of third world countries. They're more in Central America, Mexico, some countries in Africa, things like that. Those kind of countries use that. But most modernized countries like China, like the UK, like Russia, like Europe, and of course, some others, they kind of changed and amended their ways to become a citizen, which basically says if you have blood. So if your mom or if your father is a citizen of said country, then you can become a citizen of said country because of your mother or your father. And a lot of these countries don't have, a lot of the modernized countries don't have this just soil thing where if you're born in that country, you become a citizen automatically. Now, that is complete crap, right? I mean, come on, let's be serious. People come here, right? What if a tourist came here and, you know, they're not that rich. They're kind of poor. They come here and they have a kid and now they have a child. They can't go back to their country because they want to have the child here. And now they want to stay here. Now they get all the benefits. They get welfare. They get housing. They get all these social, kind of benefits. Is that fair to the taxpayer? I mean, granted, yeah, they're probably going to get a job, but their taxes, they're not really paying taxes. A lot of them don't pay taxes because they have to keep their money to pay for what they have. And if they do pay taxes, they're getting it back through the social benefit, through the social, social net that we have for them. Then when they come here and have that. Now, is that fair? Is that truly and honestly fair? Which I don't believe it is. I can't fathom in my mind to make it fair that it's okay to drop your kid off here or come here, have a baby here and say that, oh, I'm here illegally, or I'm touring, I'm a tourist, I have a baby here, I'm now American. That just doesn't make it, that doesn't make sense to me. And I don't see how it can make sense to other people. But my main thing right now is the fact that Trump wants to use the executive branch to try to push this. Now, if you guys don't know, the executive branch doesn't interpret things like that. They can't interpret the Constitution like how Trump wants to. Right now, the 14th Amendment, when it was written by Senator Howard, he did not write it in a way, he didn't want it to be interpreted in a way where everyone that comes on U.S. soil becomes a citizen. That part is true. I mean, it's inside the Senate records. You all can find it online. It is visibly there. It is signed and it is there. He did not interpret it for those people who are illegal to be here. Only people who are supposed to be here and who are of American citizens, not those or who are here legally, you know, who are actually in the jurisdiction of the United States. Because basically they're saying if you're here illegally, then you're not in the jurisdiction of the United States. So it's like you're not walking on our soil unless you are permitted to be here. Right? That's why he didn't include tourists. That's why he didn't include, you know, foreign governments. You know, when foreign government officials come here and have their kid and their, you know, their wives are pregnant or whatever, and they have kids, you know, that's why they're still not citizens here, right? They're not citizens. Neither are tourists, and neither should illegal people. They shouldn't be able to say that now you had a kid here, you're American citizens. He didn't write it as such. He didn't write it like that, and that's the truth. But the way that Trump is trying to go about it is wrong. The way that Trump is trying to do this is complete authoritarian crap. It seriously is. He's trying to use the executive branch to interpret this. He's trying to be the judicial branch, which he's not. He's not the judicial branch. The judicial branch is the branch of government, of our government, of the U.S. government, that can interpret how things are written in the Constitution. They are the only one. You can thank the Supreme Court Justice Marshall for that, for judicial review, long time ago. You can thank him for that. They are the branch that interpret these things. The executive branch does not and will not and should not have the power to do so. Because then if they did, then they should be able to interpret anything they want. They can interpret anything they want if that's the case. And they can say, well, we don't think on behalf of the executive branch, we don't think that's right, so we're going to do it this way. Now, if Trump wanted to say that he's going to go to court, he's going to try to kick out legal immigrants who've had their kids here and try to kick them out and take it to court and have a court proceeding about this and have the Supreme Court or whichever district he's going to be fighting in, district court he's going to be fighting in, that's fine. That's okay. That's the process. Or if he wanted to go through Congress and actually get Congress to amend this, then that's also fine. But he's not. He's trying to go over them. He's trying to make sure that he can do this. And a lot of these silly lawyers that say that he can are ridiculous. It's like they haven't read the Constitution. It's like people are telling Trump things that aren't true just to get a row out of him, just so he can go on TV and say it. And now it's a big thing. And Trump is saying, well, there's a lot of people who are going to agree with me. No, Mr. President, I'm sorry. This is dumb Trump. This is really bad. This is not how it works. And it shouldn't work that way. We should talk about this. This is an issue that has been going on for a very long time. This is nothing new. This is nothing new. You know, there's been several court cases about this very issue, right? But it hasn't made it all the way to Supreme Court, right? It hasn't been toiled and thrown around and ideas and fixed. But, you know, I'll give Trump this. It is something that we need to be fixed. It is something that we should all be talking about, because this is a serious issue. Anchor babies is a serious thing and has been happening for a very, very long time. And we have not talked about it. We have put it on the side and we just continued to let it go. And this is what happens when we do that, when we let these problems go and say, oh, we'll deal with it in the future. Oh, we'll let, you know, legislators and, you know, different leaders in the future take care of it. Not right now. Not our problem. Not on the table. We need to take care of it. We need to talk about it. And when we start talking about it and when we get down to figure it out and let the Supreme Court and our government officials actually go through the process and debate this out and come up with a legal standing, then we can start making plans. Then we can start implementation. But it's not going to be okay if the executive branch is doing this, if he thinks he's going to get this through an executive order. You know, I remember the time when Trump said he's not going to use executive orders like Obama did. But yet I continue to see executive order after executive order after executive order used to take away liberty or just to do whatever the hell him and his Republican cronies want to do, which makes me not like Trump as much as I did. And it's really, really sad, and it really hurts my heart. So, guys, listen. We have to be able to talk about issues, and we have to do it in the right process. Using government to push these agendas all the time is not going to work. We have to have a process, and if we're going to do certain things like this, it's important that we use that process, because that's what our founding fathers did. That's what the Constitution is there for, and that's what we should be focusing on. Not ramping it up for some kind of political bit to win the midterm elections, not just for, you know, a silly political theater, as I've been talking about for the couple of weeks. These are serious issues, and these are serious people who need our help, and we need to figure this out. We need to amend this, we need to modernize this, because we're going to run out of space. It's not going to help the economy if people continue to give, you know, raise our taxes just to give the people anchor babies, which there has been plenty of studies where, you know, these people who come here illegally and have babies and now stay here has taken up a great sum of our welfare system, who is using and abusing our welfare system. And it's something that we all have to focus on. So before I go, I want you guys to know that, you know, I love when people come to this country to try to find a better life. But I always want them to do it the right way, because there are plenty of people who are doing the right way, who are in line who gets pushed aside when illegals come in. I know legal people are not just coming up here for the sake of coming up here. They're running away from their crap countries and they're running away from situations that are awfully terrible. But there's still a process, and if that process is not followed, we're only going to get, you know, deeper into the hole of crap, and it's one day it's going to hurt us really, really badly, and people are going to get hurt more than get help. So thank you guys for tuning in to the Classical Liberal Podcast. I'm glad the show is back to the Classical Liberal Podcast, as I said at the beginning. I'm glad you guys stuck around for the whole thing, and I appreciate every single one of you. Thank you for all my donors. Thank you for my sponsors, and I will see you guys on Monday for episode 9. You guys have a fantastic weekend, and I will see you then.